Hi, and this is the Physics High Podcast. A quick quiz. Do you A, want to be inspired by science communicators? B, want to learn all about science education? C, want guidance on your scientific journey? Well, how about D, all of the above? Now, if you watch the ads on TV, one of the types of ads that push a very scientific line in promoting their products are beauty products. Now, whether it's skincare, makeup, or sunscreen, the presenter is usually in a white lab coat, uses big words to sell the idea that their products actually work. But do their scientific claims actually stack up? Today, my guest is Michelle Wong, who runs Lab Muffin and through videos on YouTube and articles, reviews beauty products. But with a PhD in chemistry, she throws in a healthy dose of scientific reality. And through it all, she communicates good science to an audience who may be looking for beauty advice, but will end up also receiving a good education. In essence, she is a science communicator and in her field of chemistry and beauty products, is seeking to raise the scientific literacy of her audience. Welcome, Michelle.
Hi, Paul. Nice to see you.
Now, you've got close to 8 million views on your YouTube channel with 255,000 subscribers. On the rare chance that there is someone watching who's never heard of Lab Muffin before and what you do, tell us a little bit about what you do on your website.
So my name is Michelle. I run Lab Muffin Beauty Science, and on Lab Muffin Beauty Science, I talk about the science behind beauty products. So if people are wondering how a product works, or if there's some sort of rumor going around the beauty industry, beauty sphere, then I'll debunk it or confirm it.
What made you start that? Like you did it, you mentioned that you did a PhD in chemistry, and you've now moved on to something related, obviously, in this case, with beauty products. What was the impetus for you starting Lab Muffin?
So I was doing my PhD. I started my PhD back in 2009. And I got into my field, which was medicinal and supramolecular chemistry, because I was really interested in seeing how different substances interacted with your body. I think that was really the very start of it. I think it was back when I was in maybe year 8 or something. I was wondering, when I take a Panadol tablet, how does it know where to go? How do I know, like, how does it stop my pain in my head when I just take it through my mouth? I know it goes into blood, but how does it get there? And then I don't think you need to do a PhD to answer that question, but that's where I ended up in medicinal chemistry. And I was, during my PhD, I was looking at how different substances would interact with your body. And at the same time, I was using skincare products. And so I started wondering, how does this actually work? How is this product protecting my skin from the sun? How is this product claiming to reduce wrinkles? And when I looked online, there just wasn't very much on it. There were obviously journal articles and textbooks and stuff like that, but there wasn't anything that was easy to understand. I think back then there were two websites that even touched on the science behind beauty products. And so I started digging, I started looking the stuff up for myself. And then eventually I was like, well, if I'm interested in it, surely other people want to know as well. And so I may as well write it up for people. And yeah, that's where it started.
In that time, what was the first beauty myth that you came across that you really wanted to challenge in your work?
I think the very first one, I think it was my second blog post. It was, are natural substances better, like natural beauty products? Mm. I think it's still around today. I think it goes into all sorts of spheres. Like humans just have this tendency to assume that things that are natural are better for you. And it's something that's so built into our evolution, I think, down there in our prehistoric brain. And so it's something that's so difficult to break because we have so much more advanced knowledge now. We know how to test if things are good or bad. And I guess our evolution just hasn't caught up to that. And also there are so many natural things that are awful for us. That's a lot of why we have science and technology improving our lives, because naturally we get eaten by bears, we get skin cancer, we die awful deaths.
So you started obviously blogging initially, so on your website and so forth, but then you decided to morph into YouTube as well, which sort of is a synergy between the two. Well, did you start that like soon after you started the blog, or was that the sort of like a growing development? You wanted to do something a little bit different?
So in 2011, I was still doing my PhD. I graduated in 2013 and I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life, except I knew I didn't want to go into academia. I feel like that's the position that a lot of people end up at right after their PhD. I have had a lot of friends who were also in that position because I guess after you've done a PhD, all you know is academia and you know whether or not you want to stay there. You just don't really know what's after that. So I wasn't sure what to do. But when I was doing my PhD and even before then, I loved teaching. I really enjoyed teaching. I was tutoring high school. I taught first year. I taught third year labs as well. And so I took up a job with a tutoring company here in Sydney. So we do, I'm still there at the moment. I teach a few hours a week and we do high school tutoring. And so I was doing my blog on the side as well. But then because I was in the classroom so much, like we teach 3-hour classes, I was teaching a lot of things while using my hands, which is one thing that's really difficult to do through a blog. Like some things need animation. And yeah, you just can't do that when you're writing. So I started looking up how to like make GIFs. And then I was like, this is stupid. This is taking so long. I could just show people with my hands. And so that's how I started on YouTube, because I just found text a bit too limiting, and even drawings as well. I got really good at drawings on my blog, but then, yeah, it's not quite enough. So in 2017, I started on YouTube.
You were in the tutoring company as well, but I read also that you actually became head of faculty as well. Was that at a school that you were as well?
No, that was at the tutoring college, but it's a really big tutoring college. So I think we had, I think when I stopped being the head of the faculty, we had 2,500 chemistry students, I think, in year 11 and 12.
So how did you find that? I mean, I'm a head teacher, so I run a YouTube, I run a podcast about head teacher, and you're just constantly juggling, obviously, this way of communicating. How have you found that? And did the one aspect of your life, your teaching, impact the other aspect and vice versa? Was there a synergy?
Definitely. I think a lot of what I do on YouTube is basically teaching. I'm sure you know as well. A lot of it, there's so many translatable skills. And one of the reasons why I'm still teaching a few hours a day is I really like getting the feedback from students. A lot of the time when you're making YouTube videos, it feels like you're just like sending stuff into the ether and you're hoping that it works. You get comments, of course, but I think people tend to be either much nicer or much meaner on the internet. So you don't really get like a good reflection of what the average person thinks of your video. But when you're in the classroom, you can just see who understands and who doesn't. And so I think a lot of that classroom training has made me a lot better at talking on camera and also just structuring how I present things.
So tell us a little bit about the process. Clearly, you have an almost endless supply of topics. I mean, you've got over 60, 70 posts, I noticed, on your website, and clearly you're continuing to produce videos. What's the process when you have a question that you want to address and you want to make a video on it? What process do you undertake?
That's a really good question, because I think my process is just chaos. I think one of the reasons I ended up where I am, I think, is because I'm quite a creative person. And like, it's very fundamental to me. Like I can't not be creative, which also makes me awful at anything that requires like a rigorous procedure. But I think a lot of it is just instinct, but very roughly, with the topics, I get them from all over the place. Sometimes people ask me questions. If a lot of people ask me the same question, then a lot of the time I'm like, well, clearly people want to know, so this is a good topic. Sometimes it's just I'm reading something and it really annoys me. And I found that being annoyed at something is really good motivation for me to really dig to the bottom of it. So once I have a question, then I'll start researching. I think I'm a bit not traditional in my research because I won't just look at journal articles. Obviously, I'll start off with a literature search. I'll look up some journal articles. I'll look up what people are saying about it as well. So what the popular misconceptions are, because I think it's best to always do a video where you tackle the question, but you also tackle some of the next questions that people will have, because then people walk away with a more complete picture. And I think that's always better because as much as we like to think that science education is just getting facts across, we're humans and we like stories. And so if you get a good, complete narrative out, then people walk away understanding it a lot better and having, I guess, a better insight into how things work, which I really love doing. So I'll read a lot around it. I'll read what people are saying. I'll read reviews. And then hopefully that eventually knits together into a nice narrative. One of the things I do as well is I used to do this a lot more formally, but I'll copy paste information into a giant document. It ends up being like 60 pages. And as I'm writing the video, by the end of it, I want to understand everything that I've pasted into that document. And so if I've answered all of the questions, if everything makes sense according to all the information I found that I thought could be relevant, then I feel like I'm done.
You touched on a few couple of things. Number one, what annoys you and as your creative process. I had a bit like myself. So I went to CERN in 2019. Are you familiar with CERN, right? And I was so annoyed by the fact that people were worried that this was a place of, demonic activity and there's going to produce black holes and so forth. So I had to produce a video on will CERN destroy the Earth with black holes, And the other aspect too is that research process with my videos, you'll have this the same too. Clearly, there's a lot of stuff that you didn't know at the end of your PhD that you know now and the process. And that's part of the benefit of doing this work of producing content because you're constantly learning and constantly growing. And I think that's a really good thing. So, I can relate to what you're saying. So, question, why Lab Muffin?
So I am a procrastinator, and I put stuff off forever. And I've been thinking about setting up a beauty blog for months and months and months. And eventually I was like, look, if I don't do it, I'll just never do it. I just need to pick a name and start going, and then I can change it later. I just need to start. And so I picked a name. At the time, my nickname was Muffin. I worked in a lab, seemed to go together. It was unique enough for Google. So I used it and was like, definitely change that later when I think up a better name. Never thought up a better name.
On to about you and your basically how you got into science. You went to James Roos Agricultural College and you got, is that correct? And you got a 99.9 in the UAI. Well done.
my LinkedIn,
And you mentioned already your interest in chemistry in year eight. Was that was that the time when you really piqued interest in science, or was it something even earlier? Were you always interested in science? Clearly, you must have done well in science. So, where did your science journey start?
I think as a kid, I was actually way more interested in arts, to be honest. Like, I loved reading, I loved drawing, I loved all of that creative stuff. But then in year eight, my best friend wanted to go to this extracurricular chemistry class. I know it's so James Roos is the biggest nerd school. There was a chemistry Olympiad class that was free, and my friend wanted to go to it. It was during lunchtime, so I was like, so I went there socially, basically. And the teacher was very good. Her name's Liz New, and she's currently an academic at UCID. I think she's associate professor now. She's really lovely, still lovely. And she was just a really good teacher. So I think back then she was in year 11 or 12, and she was trying to teach these year eights. Like, I'm pretty sure she got paid like $20 or something an hour to teach a group of rowdy year eights chemistry during lunchtime. So I think it was more of like a social event than anything. But then some of that definitely stuck because I kept on going. And so I was doing lots of arts on the side, and I was also doing chemistry. And then I also had a really, really great teacher in year nine. He always had so many interesting stories. And I think that really fueled my love of chemistry. I think a lot of people, I don't think anyone should really hate science. I think science is just so interesting. And if they hate it, it's because they didn't click with their teacher. I think science teachers are so important in developing our interest.
You did chemistry. Did you do any other sciences as well? Did you do physics and biology?
I actually didn't. I regret it now. I think physics would have been really interesting. But one of the things I think back then, the syllabus focused, or at least at my school, they really focused on equations. And like, I was good at math, so it was always just sub in the numbers, get the right answer. I was like, if this is physics, this is really boring. I didn't realize the really interesting bits of physics were like, once you get that fundamental stuff, then it gets interesting. And I really regret not taking it. Biology, I ended up doing a lot of biology at uni because I took physiology and pharmacology as well as chemistry. And yeah, so you end up covering a lot of biology, but I didn't take it in high school.
I have to confess, I know very little about beauty products. And so as I was looking through all your blogs, your posts and your videos, clearly a lot of it was like, oh, this is new to me and this is new to me. But I particularly was, my interest was piqued when I noticed a number of videos where you particularly were communicating good scientific principles. So for example, your video from June last year, anecdotal evidence versus scientific evidence. So Lab Muffin, is it a case of you wanting to communicate science and you want to use beauty products as your vehicle? Or is it like, oh, I'm really interested in beauty products, but this is a real good opportunity to communicate science?
I think it's a bit of both. So on the one hand, I think science is really important, and I think communicating that and teaching people how to critically evaluate scientific evidence is an important part of, I guess, improving our whole society, really. Because I think when everyone's making decisions that are good for them, and not just being lulled into marketing myths, regardless of the area, whether it's beauty products or food, then everyone benefits. On the other hand, beauty products are a really important part of everyone's lives, unless you manage to avoid using soap. Everyone is using beauty products daily. And there are just so many myths that have grown up around it. And I think it's a really good way of reaching people who think they're not interested in science, because I think a lot of science communication, at least the way I saw it when I was going through uni, is centered on topics that people are drawn to if they already think they like science. So things like space, nature, all of these really, I guess, like big documentary type topics where there's lots and lots of funding and everyone sees it and they think science. But I think a lot of people who think they're not interested in science, they're still interested in beauty products. And I think everyone deep down just wants to buy things that work. Whether it's beauty or food or electronics, everyone just wants to not be ripped off. They want something that works. And I think, science is the perfect way of working out if something will actually work. So I think it's a good way of reaching people that way as well.
Yeah, I love what you're doing. And I like what you're saying is that, yeah, absolutely. You are, in many ways, respects targeting a population who could have easily have said, I don't want science after year 9 and 10. And they're the ones that often are going to still make decisions in the future, either politically or making decisions for their own personal choices. And in one of those ways, it's not underhanded, but in many ways, you're surreptitiously teaching people to be critical thinkers, teaching them to be, you know, make decisions based on evidence, not based on, oh, well, it worked for me type of attitude. I think that's a great way of communicating science without actually saying I'm communicating science. You're on YouTube. Clearly, you and I both will get a lot of comments on our videos and so forth. Have you received much pushback from what you've done in terms of, I mean, you've mentioned sort of offhand, you have good comments and you have bad comments. In terms of, do you find some resistance to some of the scientific thinking that you're trying to present?
Definitely. So a lot of it is if I'm doing a topic that goes beyond the beauty community, I guess. Most people in the beauty community, I guess, because my stuff is quite technical a lot of the time, I think I attract like people who are already quite knowledgeable about beauty a lot of the time. And so they come to me when they want the really complex, more intense sort of stuff. But sometimes I'll do topics that spread into other areas. So, for example, I did a video on why you shouldn't make your own sunscreen. And a large portion of the sort of natural food community are really into making their own sunscreen. And so I think I explained it well in that video, but I think a lot of people, they just saw the title and they made comments. So I get a lot of comments accusing me of working for a sunscreen company, stuff like that. And I get a lot of comments about my appearance as well, which I think is just something that happens if you're female online. You can sort of easily shrug that off, I think.
I guess too, in terms of in your space, you also have a lot of celebrities espousing their products. I mean, Gwyneth Paltrow comes to mind with her Goop products, and clearly the science is not backed up. So we've got a lot of people following people like celebrities. They would probably resist to some of the things that you're saying because you're actually challenging the celebrity in many respects.
Yeah, I think that sometimes happens. I feel like that hasn't happened as much. Again, maybe because I am on like the more sciencey end of the beauty sphere. So people have already been inducted a bit through more popular, less technical influences before they filter through to me. So perhaps I don't get quite as much of that. But yeah, it's definitely problematic having celebrities as spokespeople who are telling people how science works. So I think one big issue in the beauty industry at the moment is with clean beauty, the idea that beauty products contain ingredients that will give you cancer in the long run. And this is mostly pushed by celebrities who don't have any sort of scientific background. So there's been a bill in California that's been pushed by one of the Kardashians. I think it's Kourtney, about particular ingredients and how they should be banned. And yeah, I think it's a big problem when we look to celebrities to tell us expertise, like information that should require expertise.
So an opportunity now is if you had a student in year 8 or 9 and is not sure whether they should take science in the high school in high school, what advice would you give them?
That's a good question. I think I would say, well, what are you interested in and how many units do you have to choose from? I think when I went through high school, I had no idea what I wanted to do. So I ended up taking a mix of science and art subjects. So I think I did like drama, commerce, chemistry, 4-unit English, 4-unit maths, history and history extension. Like I did a mix of like everything, which I think is a good thing to do if you don't know what you're doing. Like I have friends, one of my best friends in high school, still one of my best friends, she knew she wanted to be a doctor the whole time. So she picked subjects for medicine and then she went all the way through and now she's an anaesthetist. And I think I'm really jealous of people like that because they just know they know what they want to do and they stuck to it and they regret nothing. And I think it's amazing if you can go through life like that. I did not. So I think one of the things is you need to try stuff and then you'll know whether or not it fits. Some things you can't tell until you try. So yeah, just try a mix of things, try everything you think you might be interested in, and then ask yourself, what did I enjoy? What like spoke to me the most?
I assume when you finished your high school career, you didn't think about the fact that in, 10 years' time, you'd be running a successful YouTube channel on beauty products.
Definitely not. So I had a lot of pressure from my parents to do medicine, law, or accounting. The usual Asian parents, sort of their favorite careers. And yeah, I don't think my parents, even now, I don't think they really understand what I'm doing, but I think they're happy that I seem happy. But yeah, I think things tend to have a way of working themselves out eventually. Like eventually you find out what you want to do. And I think it's good to keep in mind that most people don't know what they're doing still. Adults maybe seem like they know what they're doing, but most of us are just working it out as we go.
Can you see Lab Muffin continuing for the next 5 to 10 years? Where are you headed with your YouTube?
That's always a good question, but I am the sort of person who just makes stuff up as they go along. So I don't really have much of a 5 to 10 year plan, but I don't see myself stopping anytime soon.
My last question for you, Michelle, is this. Is an opportunity for you to share or teach us something, maybe something that you're currently really passionate or interested in. And it doesn't have to be science related at all. So I've had people talk about wanting to bake a cake, someone talk about bird watching, others talking about their music abilities and so forth. What is something that you would like to share with us, something that you're nerding about?
I'm really obsessed with houseplants at the moment. I'm trying to learn how to, well, I've got a lot of houseplants. You can't quite see them. They're off to the side. But I've been obsessed with trying to get them to grow. It's very sad because I know all the theory. I know they need photosynthesis. They need light. They need nutrients. Plus I went to an agricultural high school. So like I learned a lot about growing things. But they're just a mystery, and it's so satisfying when one pops out a leaf out of nowhere. It's really fun looking after little plants.
So did you do some research on indoor plants as opposed to outdoor plants?
Honestly, it's just been, I've been just mucking around trying to work it out as I go. I've applied a lot, like I've watched a lot of videos, I've read a lot of stuff. I apply them and then sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And then, it's very non-linear, which I think is one of those things about partial reinforcement. So if you get rewarded every time you press a button, then you're not as addicted as if you don't get rewarded every time. And so now, like if the plant stops growing and then suddenly it grows like 10 centimeters, it's very addictive.
And any particular type of plants? Are you looking at ornamentals, flowers? What's the type of plant you particularly like?
So I'm a millennial, and so I'm growing like the most stereotypical millennial plants. So I've got a fiddle leaf fig. I've got a bunch of ficus audreys, which are sort of like fiddle leaf figs, but they've got like bigger leaves. They're very Instagram plants. It's quite embarrassing. My boyfriend thinks it's the most ridiculous thing.
Well, Michelle, it's been great to talk to you. I'm certainly going to have a look more videos because I have to learn a little bit more of my chemistry. My chemistry is my weakness, and certainly, yes, sunscreens and soap are my beauty products, so and the shampoos. But
I'll send you a list of my least beauty videos.
But anyway, thank you for your time and look forward to sharing our discussion with my audience. Take care.
Thank you very much for having me.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please remember to subscribe to get notifications of upcoming interviews. And you can find me on YouTube, Facebook and Twitter at Physics High. My name is Paul from Physics High. Till next time.